Today's program is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is our special New Year's show. We're in New England at the home of Horst Dornbusch, our good friend, beer consultant, and assistant editor of the Oxford Companion to Beer and all that stuff. But it's pretty cool. I came up to New England to visit my family. We've been checking out some breweries like Mystic, Cambridge Brewing, Smutty Nose, and Trillium. But we were invited to this special dinner with Horst and good buddy Todd Mott, formerly of Portsmouth Brewing. We knew him for Kate the Great, and now he's got his own brewery in Kittery, Maine, the Tributary Brewing at 10 Chapelet Road, Kittery, Maine. So that's a brief intro, Jack. I know you're taking this on the other end, but we're going to have a conversation, and well, here we go. So, Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank
you. Tell us a little about your background.
Oh, I started a long time ago. But, you know, the history was sort of I got a homebrew kit from my wife. As kind of a joke, because I was doing my master's in ceramics, and she was kind of pissed that I was drinking so much beer in the studio, and she was like, well, why don't you make your own beer? And we got a homebrew kit and started making beer and entering homebrew competitions. There are a couple of brewers out there, Phil Markowski, Ron Page, and Garrett Oliver, were all competitors of mine. Way back when we were homebrewers, and now look where they are now. So it's pretty amazing that we started off as humble homebrewers, but we did, and I think there's a lot to be said about that. But now I have my own brewery with my wife Galen, who happens to be here with us. And she won't talk much, but she will talk eventually, hopefully.
Oh, yes.
Well, you got Horst Dornbusch. So, Horst, you set up this special dinner at your home in West Newbury, Massachusetts for the holidays. So what are some things that our listeners should know about Todd Mott?
He likes to eat.
Well, I have known Todd for more decades than I would like to remember, and I'm sure the same holds true for him. But I have always respected him as a consummate professional who, when he doesn't know what he should know, he will search for it, and he makes beers true to style, and he has experimented with a vast amount of styles, and all his beers have been absolutely perfect. It's very hard to detect defects in his beers, and I think I know what I'm talking about because there are people on several continents who make me fly to their locations to be a beer judge. And I have judged Todd's beers for decades, and I have found them universally superior.
Well, we know you're one of the experts, but your wife, Elva, tell us about your experience working with Horst in the beer world. Because we, you know, we've identified that Todd Mott is one of the great brewers in the Northeast. And what gives your husband the right to say that?
Well, when I first met him, he used to talk about how he made beer when he was still had the Dornbusch Brewing Company. And I didn't know everything he was talking about, but I certainly was impressed by the depth of what he was talking about, even though I wasn't sure what it was. But over the years, as he's written articles and talked with people around the world, it's just been the incredible depth and breadth of knowledge that he has. And as I've learned more about beer, I've come to determine that he actually knows what he's talking about. But that's 15 years later, and so now I think he's
We have a lot to say about Horst and Todd tonight. Galen, you're Todd's wife, and you're involved in this venture now in Tributary in Kittery, Maine. Tell us about this experience for you, because you guys only opened recently.
It's been amazing. The community of Kittery and the craft brewing community beyond Kittery and Maine, New England, all the people that come to Tributary because they've heard about us from all different parts of the country and some internationals. It's just overwhelming. And the main thing they say is the beer is good. It is awesome. And that really, you know, bodes well for all of Todd's experience and his career in brewing.
You know, so I was able to hone my skills on other people's equipment is basically what it comes down to. And I spent the better part of 25 years brewing beer and having brewed beer for other people. It was time for Galen and myself to do it for ourselves. And so I've talked to so many people that have started their own breweries and it is a 24/7 job, but we're doing it for ourselves, and that it's so spectacular to get literally all these people from all over the world coming in, drinking our beer and telling us that you're doing a good job. And it really comes down to how we craft the beer. And the most important thing is that we are using great ingredients because we have the capacity to get great ingredients. We have a great brewery.
So what beer are we drinking right now?
We're drinking our pale ale, which is the one flagship beer that we're doing. And the cool thing about what we're doing is that we have a little bit different concept from most of the big beer, any beer company. Most beer companies have flagships, and they're constantly repeating the same beers over and over and over again. And I give them the greatest accolades for that. And consistency is the name of the game. We have one beer that we're killing. It's just a great pale ale. It's a beer that everyone can drink. It's not an IPA. It's not a wimpy beer. It's got a beautiful hop forward aromatic note to it. It's totally drinkable. But that's the only beer we really want to put out consistently. The rest of the beer, we don't want to be tied down to a brand, a style. So we're just going to continue to make beers. And
I say, you have been married to Todd for a long time, and he's been working in brew pubs for a long time. And I said, you can't take the brew pub brewer out of the brewery. And even though we are now a production brewery, he is going to change up the styles. That's what we're doing.
So
we're
going to
do
yeah.
the pale ale, and then we're going to be just changing it up.
Yeah, so we've got, right now we only have 4 beers on draft in our tap room. But the cool thing about our tap room is it's a very communal tap room. We've got picnic tables, we've got some lounge chairs, we've got a church pew, and we have a bar. And so, you know, you can sit or hang wherever you want. We have music on Saturdays, so it's kind of a gathering spot. And I think that's what the original pub was. It was a gathering spot, and to be able to come in and drink different styles of beer. Weekly is kind of fun, and some weeks we don't even have the pail because we run out of it, and we just don't have enough fermentation capacity right now, and we're working on that, and we're refiguring our game plan. But
so, if I had to ask you, what styles of beer would you make that I would seek out? What would they be? And Horst, you can join in as well.
Well, certainly the pale is one of our premier beers. And I think because I've been brewing for a long time, and I do love hops, that I wanted a beer that was hop forward, but totally drinkable for anybody. But we do an IPA, we do a milk, we got a milk stout on that right now. We've had so many people in that were like, I don't like stouts. Stouts are acrid and bitter. They come in and they drink our milk stout. It's got this beautiful, luscious lactose assage character to it that softens all the roast. It's just so drinkable. And we're actually going to drink that with Horst's tenderloin tonight. And I'm really looking forward to this course. So maybe Horst should go out and pull dinner together.
The tenderloin is actually marinated in lemon juice, has been marinated for about a week, and it will go extremely well with a milk stout with residual lactic sugar sweetness. One of the things I really like about Todd is that he has been able to incorporate in his portfolio a complete variety of the world's beer styles. He doesn't just focus on British style beers or American extreme beers or Belgian beers. He also incorporates several German beers in his portfolio,
and
these are much harder to make. And he has a brew system.
An Egyptian beer.
Right, we have even brewed an ancient Egyptian beer from the era of the pharaohs of about 4,000 years ago, and with mandrake root and all kinds of weird ingredients,
dates.
Like dates and ginger. So Todd is both experimental and a classicist. And I like that about the way he is conceiving of his brewery. And I think we should point out that he ordered a brew system that allows him to make not only English-style thick mash beers, but also thin mash German-style beers as well as Belgian beers. So he has a very versatile.
I'll say that Horst gave me a list of questions, and one of them included the equipment that you got for your brew pub. So what equipment did you buy?
Well, we used local fabricators. So our brew house came from Gloucester, Massachusetts, out of a brewing system called New England Brewing Systems. And Horst is one of the consultants and proprietor.
I had a few things to do with designing the system that Todd is using.
Yep. And then we also bought local fermentation and cellaring tanks through TIG Pro, which is up in Portland, Maine. And our, you know, we decided that we would keep as much of our equipment local as we could, mainly because we're a local company. We're based, community based, and so the closer people are that can come and fix things, the easier it is for us. You know, when you buy a system from Canada or Germany or whatever, you know, they'll be here, but they won't be here in 2 hours or 1 hour.
And it's very expensive to fly somebody from Hamburg to Kittery via Lufthansa. So you have already spent a lot of money before they get there to look at your.
So you think, of course, that you have good local breweries. You also need local equipment and other, you know, support staff and everything.
Competent local equipment. It's not just that you're going to a metal fabricating shop down the road and ask them to make a fermenter. You need to know what you're doing. So
absolutely.
And Todd's system is extremely versatile.
Yeah, totally versatile.
We can make almost any
style. Yeah.
Beer style in the world, and that's not what the average brewery
can offer. How does that system do that?
Well, it's a multi-purpose brew kettle mash louder mash kettle, and then we have a separate louder tun, so we can actually dough into our mash kettle, raise the temperature because we've got steam jackets and a paddle in it, and then we can transfer to the louder tun, separate the
extract through slurry pumping.
Separate the extract from the mash, and then pump it, transfer it back into the kettle, and do our regular brew system from there. But it's just it's a very functional system because we can also just do a single temperature infusion right in our louder tun. So we can do the very basic, simple English style pale ales, or Russian imperial stout right in our mash tun. Or we can do, upward infusion, Czech style pills, or whatever, in our mash kettle. So,
and technically, you can even do a decoction if you wanted to.
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost.
A single batch decoction.
A single decoction. Yeah. So we have a really great brewery, And it's small, you know, it's only a 15-barrel brew house, but it enables us to make just what we want to make. And that's
so this is the exact system that you wanted to make the beers that you can make.
I just wanted the flexibility to be able to make a myriad of styles. And that's, you know, that's what every brewer wants to do. Your hands are tied when you have a mash tun and a brew kettle, you know, because basically you can do single temperature infusion in a mash tun. But when you have the capacity to do upward infusion, you can literally take your temperature range from 95 degrees Fahrenheit all the way up to 167 over the course of 4 hours. And you've done these incredible steps to utilize all your enzymes and degradate starches. So it's really getting too technical here. It's a great brewery. It's a great little brewery.
We don't usually get so technical. But
okay,
it's, it's late at night and we're having a great dinner.
And we're drinking beer.
Here.
And that's it. And we still have
four, just the courses.
We got five courses to go here.
What do we have on the
well,
dinner?
We've got the Segundi El Cantorno.
Contorno.
Contorno. Filetto di mai marinetto e
No, sorry,
Italian. My Italian sucks.
His beer is better than his Way Italian process.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
What is this movie?
We're going to figure out this dinner. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions.
Awesome.
Take a sip from your chalice just and I bow my head to you.
Today's break song is Shadow Puppets by Odetta Hartman. You're listening to Beer Sessions Radio.
Since 2001.
So, you like good beer? Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're doing a special holiday show. It's going to air in January 2015. We're at the home of Horst Dornbusch in West Newbury, Massachusetts. And we're talking with Todd Mott from Tributary Brewing. He brewed at Portsmouth Brewing for a long time. So here we are. We're doing our show. Jack, take it away, buddy. Okay. Todd, so you were talking about photography. You went from a brewer to owning a brew pub. You know, what are some of the ideas you have for running a brew pub?
Actually, Jimmy, we don't own a brew pub. We have
a tap
room. It's a brewery with a tap room. So, yeah, no, I'm kidding you. As it turns out, we have... Cheers. Awesome.
Cheers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Toast.
Excellent milk stout.
Yeah, well, so we got a little milk stout. We got a little tributary milk stouts go with the tenderloin. And in any event, we are a, you know, I would call this an artisanal brewery, but my background is I got my master's in ceramics. And the coolest thing about being a ceramic artist is that I firmly understand art, and I love all things art. I love all artists, and we have some friends that are all different artists, glass artists, photographers, printmakers, you name it. But we want to put together a little show in our space, which has a couple of large walls on it, and to actually have a photographer, a local photographer who's been shooting New England brewers, come and do a show with a book signing. So Lauren Clark, an old friend of mine, who's been in the brewing industry for a long time, but turned to writing books, put out a book called Crafty Bastards, A History of New England Brewing. And this photographer, Michael Penny, has done some amazing photographs of local brewers. And to get the two together, I just think would be a really great use of our space. So we're working on getting Lauren to come up and do a book signing, and Michael to put his photos on the wall. And it'll just be, another opportunity to utilize our space in a different format.
And your wife, Gail, so you're like managing the tap room and the front of house.
That's right.
I mean, tell us about like how that works. I mean, people are coming to drink your beer, but you have to...
They are. And, we've got a great staff of bartenders who are pretty knowledgeable about the beer and friendly. And we've got, as Todd said earlier, we've got these picnic tables. And so we get groups of two to, eight people who come in. We've got families coming in. We have our brew dog, Katie, who's Todd's, and our Yellow Lab is there most days, and everybody just has a great time. And so running the tasting room is a lot of fun. We've got...
It's not really a job. It's more of an extension of life.
It's like having a party every day, And we have a great space. It's big. There's a lot of atmosphere there. People are very positive about what's going on, and as I said, Todd, we've got this space to hang some photographs, and
we have
live music occasionally, and it's just a happening place. That's all I have to say.
Well, Kittery, Maine, I remember being in New England. It's definitely a cool area. Kittery and Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
How'd you guys end up there? Because I mean, talking about a lot of our listeners, or whether in England or Michigan, they're going to come to New England.
They might come. You can't miss Portsmouth if you're heading up to Maine, and Portsmouth is one of the coolest little cities. It's a typical quaint New England waterfront community. It's situated right on the Piscataqua River, which is one of the largest motions of water. There's a huge bay called Great Bay upward towards Durham, New Hampshire, and into Great Bay runs this massive tidal water, and it moves literally, I think it's between 12 and 18 feet per tidal movement. And it's I think second to the Bay of Fundy in New England.
Second to the Bay of Fundy, yes.
In New England. Yep. And so it's a massive tidal surge. And the river, the Piscataqua River, moves like you would not believe. It's phenomenal. And so
that's kind of how we came up with the name Tributary Brewing Company.
Nice segue.
we moved up from Boston, and beautiful area in Maine, and there are all these smaller tributaries of the Piscataqua.
Little streams,
Brooks,
little rivers, streams, brooks, rivulets.
Salmon Falls River,
Cochico,
the Lamprey River.
Lamprey.
And, water is very important to our area for so many reasons. Tourism.
Sustaining life, first of all.
Life, farmland.
But how did you guys do it? I mean, you were a brewer, you guys had careers, you were decorative artists, and how did you guys get the financing and decide you wanted to have your own?
We robbed
the
bank. But,
we went through a couple of traditional routes of going to the bank, really. Yeah, writing our story and saying this is what we want to do. And
Todd
has the credibility and the career behind him, and so the banks were very reasonable in giving us some funding.
Some funding for the equipment.
We tried to keep it within
reason.
Within reason, we didn't. And then we
kept some very short, limited number of investors that basically are not looking to get a huge return quickly. And that's what it really came down to, is that we're going to take care of the bank first and then the investors later. And fortunately, they were hopefully later.
You would prefer it the other way.
I'm sure they all like your beer, you know.
So far, so good.
What's the beer drinking now?
This is our milk stout. Again, milk stout is a sweet stout as far as styles go. Has very few edges to it. It's more soft than it is hard. The cool thing about lactose is it goes in during the boil, but there is no fermentables in lactose. So it is a unfermentable sugar that maintains its dextrinicity throughout the entire fermentation and carries over into the finished product. And it just adds a softness to the beer, whereas a dry stout has a little bit of an acrid character to it, and a lot of people love that. But the milk stout, the sweet stout, is a stout that has some serious texture to it, as well as some roast, but is really soft and easy to drink, and it, under 6%.
Of course, there's a real like lactose nose, isn't there?
The trick about the milk stout is that the dextrins, the unfermentable sugars, in this case, do not come from the grain, but
right.
are added separately to the wort oil.
Actually, this is a pretty funny story. We got two bags of lactose, and they came from a reputable company that we've been buying malt and specialty adjuncts and stuff from for years. And on the bag, it said something about cheese. So my lead brewer, Jeff, was like, "What the hell is that cheese?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Look at that bag." I was like, "No, that's lactose." He goes, "Yeah, what's that C-H-E-E-S-E? I was like, "Cheese?" So we ripped the bag open. We're expecting like Parmesan cheese. It was milk sugar. It was lactose. But that was very funny because, oh my God, you know, here's brewer's cheese. Brewer's cheese? That's not cheese at all. It's lactose.
But of course, when you smell and taste this beer, I mean, this is not like other milk stouts. I mean, this is unique.
You mean Todd's?
The taste and the nose of this beer.
One of the key characteristics of this, to me, is that it has, as Todd said, no acrid notes whatsoever. So you have no roasted notes, even though the color is
black.
Totally
black is
pitch
nice.
Black. In other words, this is a beer that's very difficult to make because the requirements of color and the requirements of flavor fight each other. They are antagonistic. In other words, to get a beer this dark, it should taste acrid
and
roasted.
And smell acrid.
And you should smell in the bouquet. You should get the nose should be a reflection of the flavor of the beer. But in reality, this beer has none of the aromas or the flavors that you would expect from a beer this dark. So this is actually a very difficult beer to make, and only a really brave brewer will tackle it and actually succeed in pulling it off.
So what do you think? I mean, we had some conversations earlier tonight, and we're having a good time, we're drinking a lot, but
high five,
come on. How do we, there's a lot of new people making beer, and, you know, should we only ask of people like Todd, you know, you're an experienced brewer, should we have some levels of competency before we let people brew? Because, you know, we had this conversation, Todd's a great brewer, and now we're going to embrace his new brewery. But there's so many people making beer. And this is a conversation that you guys have had.
If you allow me to pick that up very briefly, the concept of craft beer has acquired a huge reputation in the United States, and justifiably so. Now, once you have that reputation, You've got to preserve it, you've got to treasure it, you've got to protect it. And you can only do so if you have people who are utterly competent in their craft. You can, if you build a house and you have a second-rate carpenter finishing your roof, at the next thunderstorm, it will leak and collapse. The same applies to craft beer. In order to preserve the pristine quality and value that craft beer represents, after all, it's more expensive than an industrial beer, than the average industrial beer. In order to justify that extra money for the extra value, you have to infuse the process that makes the beer with the competence that goes with it. Incompetent brewers could potentially ruin the whole category, the perception of the category of craft beer. It's really essential that we do not let that happen.
I mean, this is a serious conversation. I mean,
yeah, move.
Sorry.
I mean,
but there, but I have to, I'm not as knowledgeable, but I know that there are so many young people and serious people who are going to school to learn the craft of brewing beer, and they are getting a tremendous amount of information and skills in doing so. So, I mean, that's not to say that you need 22 years of experience.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Amazing amount of great brewers out there.
Elva, I want you to ask Todd a question, because we've had his beers and he's making great beers. What would you ask him if you had asked him one question?
Who does your hair?
Who does your hair?
Who trims your beard?
As it turns out, I trim my beard and Dot does
my hair. He has a good beard.
So that's a really interesting question, because Horst and I often say that in the United States there really isn't that many places for a brewer to really become, to learn to become a brewer. Because in Germany, you actually have to get a master's degree from Weihenstephan or the VLB in Berlin, or Dermans Academy. In the United States, you really only have University of California, Davis. You have
There's Corvallis now.
Yeah,
Auburn. Auburn has just opened
in
a
Maine,
fermentation.
University of Maine?
No. Auburn, Alabama.
Alabama.
But that's a new one.
Didn't know
Grand spanking
that's
new.
That's right, exactly.
Madison, Wisconsin. I mean, they are popping up right and left.
Well, and how about Steve's place,
Parks.
Stephen Parks in
Middlebury, Vermont. Yes, the American Brewers Guild.
But do you think there's enough training available for
people? He has put
out
so many fantastic brewers. So, no, there are many, many places to get an education in the United States. No
but I think, Todd, you will admit that there is a time lag between the demand for well-trained, actually scientifically trained brewers, because we understand that beer making is
art and science, absolutely.
A craft as well as
science,
a biochemical and a microbiological science.
Absolutely.
There is no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
It's all of that, right?
Without a doubt.
So there has been in the United States a time lag between the demand for competent brewers and educational institutions that can actually supply that demand for trained individuals.
True.
I think that's a fair statement.
Especially the rate that we're growing right now.
One and a half breweries
a day
opens up in the United States.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So
my question for Todd is, as Tributary grows and you're going to be hiring more brewers to do a lot of the work, what are you looking for in a brewer, and what kind of qualifications do they need to have?
I want people that have experience in the industry, and I want people that are just
passionate.
So passionate. Because, I mean, that's where I came from. I didn't learn this because it was easy. I learned it because it was interesting, because it was so much of what I am. I love art and I love science, and that's what I look for in the next, the next phases of our brewery.
Do you think it's important that they have one of these degrees?
Absolutely. And Anyone out there looking for a job? We'll be looking soon.
What's your address?
No, we're not.
Where are you? You're in Kittery, Maine. What's the address again?
It's 10 Shapley Road.
No, no, don't send mail there.
Kittery, Maine.
But don't send mail. Good God.
No, no printed mail. Let's be
Todd, T-O-D, at tributarybrewingcompany.com.
Right. Hey, we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member. There's a lot of benefits, and we've got great shows from chef shows, cheese shows, and everything else. But hey, we're up here in New England for January 2015 at the home of Horst Dornbusch in West Newbury, Massachusetts. And we just happened to come upon Todd Mott from Tributary Brewing.
I just happened to show up.
My God, this is crazy. This is like my Christmas fantasy. But let's make a toast. So, hey,
amen.
You know, Todd, you were talking about Todd. It's like Sunday night and
Tributary.
Yay, Galen.
Todd was and Galen, his wife, and he said he has to get back to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do tomorrow at your brewery?
So tomorrow is just a typical Monday. We're going to have a production meeting first thing in the morning, talk about what we're going to do during the week. We're going to have Thursday off because it is New Year's Day, and I know a lot of people like to party on New Year's Eve.
But the yeast will be working.
And the yeast will be working because we'll be putting in an IPA on Tuesday. So tomorrow we'll get our water ready. You know, we'll get it hot. We'll get our grains ready. We'll pull all the bags. We'll mill the specialties ahead of time. And then we have to clean kegs because later in the week we're going to actually be kegging a beer. So when we brew a beer, we keg a beer. And so we move a beer out of the one of the fermenters, and then we actually brew into that fermenter. So beer's going to move out tomorrow, and we'll then brew into that fermenter on Tuesday. And, you know, there's cleaning processes, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, brewers are sanitation engineers. All we do is clean shit, you know. It's just it's unbelievable how much cleaning we do. But first and foremost, cleanliness is the name of the game.
It's and godliness.
It is godliness.
You know, Todd, you've really made a name for yourself, and even I've heard of, you know, the Kate the Great beer from Portsmouth. Tell us a little bit about that, just to give our listeners some background.
Well, so KTG, Kate the Great, was a beer that was brewed originally in Boston at the Back Bay Brewing Company in 1996 as Boston Strangler Stout, and we received a cease and desist on the name, and there was much media and press about the name. It was never intentionally to be a naughty name or anything, but we changed the name, and I just called it Russian Imperial Stout from then on. I've been brewing Russian Imperial Stout since 1996. That's all there is to it. I carry the recipe with me. Every single brewery I've been in, I've brewed a batch of it. At least one batch, if not a couple. And at the Portsmouth Brewery, somehow the Alstoms, the beer advocate guys, ranked it as the number two beer on the planet in 2007. Why? I don't know. I'm not questioning.
But they love you.
But they did love the beer. And as it turns out, I actually met a really cool guy from Belgium, Urbain Couteau from Stroessa, who had the number one beer on the planet, who wanted to find out who this bitch Kate was. and he wanted to introduce Albert to Kate. And so we, in fact, did a collaboration brew in Belgium at DECA in, God, I think it was 2010. And there's still bottles of Kaybert out in the market. And if you ever get one, bring it to me. I want it. But it was really cool because we had just, you know, another Russian Imperial Stout. There's so many incredible Russian Imperial Stouts on the market. And why Kate was deemed the number one beer in America at that point, I don't know, because, you know, it was just, maybe it was an opinion poll or something like that. But we got some serious press coverage on it. And then we put out a batch after they said, hey, this is a great beer. So we made another batch. And for the most part, we were selling that beer in about 4 months. So we made 7 barrels of it, and it lasted 4 months, which was great because you could always have a pint of it at the end of the day. And, well, it wasn't a pint. You'd have about 10 ounces and you'd be on your way and happiness ensued. But we then brewed a second batch of it and it lasted about 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden the buzz hit and we put out the next batch and there was a line out the door and people were waiting for the beer to come on. And by the time I left in 2012, we ended up doing a lottery. And Peter and Joanne, Peter Eggleston, who is the proprietor of Portsmouth Brewery, just a phenomenal, phenomenal businessman, and Joanne, his partner, decided to do a lottery. And we sold, I think it was 15,000 lottery tickets. At $2 a piece, we raised $30,000 over the course of a weekend to sell 1,800 bottles. So it was a scratch ticket. This was just such a great marketing ploy because it was a lottery. It was a chance. You weren't assured of anything. But the buzz was, let's go take a chance. And the beer community, I love this beer community. This beer community is so into everything new, everything old, everything that is like hot and right now. And I just, here's to the beer community.
Cheers to them.
Cheers to the beer community.
Well, on that note, so we're drinking, what are we drinking now? We're drinking a Saison.
This is our
winter Saison.
Our winter Saison. Yeah. And it's a big beer. This is a 9.1%
Saison. Yeah, I can taste the alcohol. Mm.
You can taste the alcohol, but it's not a really hot heat. You know, most of the
no hot alcohol flavor. Yeah.
You guys were talking about styles before. Before we had the show tonight, you were pretty serious about a Kolsch has to be a Kolsch. It can't be a hoppy Kolsch. But if you're drinking a Saison, that's 9.1%. And I mean, what style is that?
But what I did was I sort of called it a winter Saison. So putting that nomenclature winter beer, that means, okay, take it for what it is, because it's going to be a big beer. This, you know, wintertime is usually time for warm beers. So this beer, when actually served at room temperature, the yeast has this character to it. This is BSI French Saison yeast, and it has this just beautiful yeast character that is... not only fruity, but has a spicy character to it. And it's
I say that? What the yeast delivers is almost like a white pepper flavor, which is a very nice balance to the malty sweetness of the beer.
It's beautiful.
And it's just but it's a big beer. This is a big, strong beer. And I thoroughly appreciate seasonal beers, and that's it. This was the first seasonal beer I brewed, and we brewed it over 3 months ago, and it came out about 3 weeks ago,
a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
And it had time to mature in one of our horizontal tanks, and we actually have 27 gallons of it on an Pinot Noir barrel that we're actually sort of holding that back to just do a very, very limited release of it at the brewery. But I also think we're going to release it at a very special restaurant in Portsmouth for their beer and game dinner, but I won't say any more than that.
It's a beautiful color. It's almost like an amber.
Light amber, yeah.
Yeah, truly, you know, jewel amber.
For people that are fans of yours and want to know, so to go to Kittery, Maine, they can go to the tasting room. Is it the tap room or the tasting room?
It's a tasting room. Yeah, yeah. So we have a bar. We have picnic tables. It's a fairly large space. So you can come in. You can bring absolutely bring food in. Bring your children. Bring your uncles, your aunts, your dogs, your elephants, whatever. Actually, I don't think the elephant will get in there. But
dogs are allowed.
To a degree, you know, we can't have a mushing team in there, you know.
Yeah, but most beer lovers love dogs, so we can't have every beer lover bringing
their dog.
But we have our dog Kate,
and she's there all the time.
Named after.
Oh, that's very cool.
But we like that. I will say this: that you know, to our listeners out there, you know, we're with Todd Mott, who is a great brewer, and Horst Dornbusch, and you know, there's a whole panel here of people. But you know, we're talking about. We've got some legends in craft beer now in America. And, you know, we've read some of the books, Audacity of Hops, and we've met Ken Grossman and Steve Hindy. But the legends are making beer, but isn't it almost that you need to put in a certain amount of time before you can really make good beer? What do you think about that, Horace?
Nothing beats experience. Book knowledge is essential. But I guess the way I would like to answer this is, and I'll make this very brief, the great philosopher Immanuel Kant wrote a book called The Critique of Pure Reason. It's about 450 pages long. I read it and I thought, well, isn't he finished? No, he wrote another 450-page book called The Critique of Practical Reason. And in the introduction, he says, some things may be true in theory, but may not work in practice. Mm. And off he went again.
Wow.
So, and I think therein lies a great metaphor for craft brewing. We need to understand the science, the biochemistry, the microbiology of brewing. We need to understand sanitation regimen and all this. But if you know all that and then understand how stainless steel works and the equipment and the pumps and the head pressure and all that stuff, you know all that, then you go into a real brewery, and you still know nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
And then you start from
scratch.
Then
you start from scratch.
You put on your rubber boots. You walk in, water for a day.
A long time.
And then
learn your craft. I totally believe that experience is key. So we have, you know, New England has a bunch of really great brewers. No question about it. I you know, Ken Grossman, Jim Cook, phenomenal. Sam Claggioni's not a pioneer, but he is the most incredible spokesman for craft beer. No questions about it. He is just the ultimate spokesman for craft
beer. It takes a combination
about some of the up-and-coming new breweries in New England?
Well, you know, again, but there's like Dan, Packett, Dan and Martha from Pretty Things, you know, making incredible beer.
Chris Loring. Been at it for a long time.
But he has been it for a long time. Chris Loring started a little tiny brewery, Tremont Brewery, in Boston many, many years ago with Alex Reviolotti. And, you know, Chris is making beer as Notch. You know, the guys at Wachusett's, the guys at Berkshire, I could reel off 1,000 brewers that I know that have been brewing for as long as I have.
And 2 decades at least.
And you know, there are so many new brewers that still have such a long way to travel before they get to, you know, fruition, maybe. But I think a lot of these new brewers are, you know, sort of on the cusp of, well, we're doing barrel, you know, we're doing sour beers. And that's awesome. I love that.
They've got their niche.
But, you know, the people that have, you know, cut their teeth and have worked in the trenches as long as I have, really have that working knowledge. And you need to taste their beers and then taste their beers against these the newer brewers and see, you know, where they stand.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people that are making great beer that are fresh, you know. I look at Maine Beer Company, you know, my God, Dan and David have only been in the industry for, you know, 5 or 6 years. They're killing it.
Rising tide.
Yeah, you they're great. Yeah.
Nathan and Heather are doing
Earth
a great
Eagle
job.
And what about for, like, our, you know, a lot of our listeners are homebrewers, and many of whom have won awards and competitions, and they want to make that leap. How do you go from a homebrew system to doing a 7-barrel or 15-barrel system?
Well, it takes a serious balls.
read the scientific literature. There are about 450 to 500 compounds in hops. We don't even know yet how many there are. And all of them are essential for the flavor composition of a beer. And we're not even talking about yeast and malt yet.
Now,
you need to understand what's the difference between myrcene, caryophyllene, and farnesene. If those words don't mean anything to you, you should not be brewing. Does that make sense, Tom?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, we are not talking about being geeks here, but you need to understand the tools of your craft.
Horace, can you say that one more time? I'm serious.
Myrcene, farnesene, caryophyllene, humulene, xanthohumulone, and so on. You need to understand the ingredients with which you are working. Although it's sort of like being a lion tamer in Las Vegas. If you don't understand lions, you try to tame them, you will be eaten. If you're a brewer who doesn't understand hops, really understand hops, and you brew with it, you are going to ultimately make a random beer that will not sell and you go bankrupt. It's that simple.
And also the whole idea of the hygiene and keeping everything clean.
That too.
And not infected.
Yes.
That's really a theme that we talk
it's
about a lot
essential.
As well.
It's essential that you understand the biochemistry and microbiology of your beer.
So you're saying perhaps that all the new, a lot of people opening small breweries or they're contracting out. Maybe they need to actually take a certificate program or some
Absolutely.
Other
oh, without
thing
a doubt.
Or
they
an
need
apprentice in
yes.
another brewery before.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Those are things for us to look for, especially, you know, we're buying beer for restaurants and bars. There's a lot going on in the world of craft beer. This has been an awesome show. We're up here in New England. We're talking to one of the brewing masters of New England, Todd Mott, who's just opened up Tributary Brewing, and we've got Horst Dornbusch and the whole crew here tonight. I just want to say thanks, everybody, for listening. This will air in January 2015. Thanks to Jack Inslee, our engineer and our producers. And we're here at Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.